Fridays between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Frosty Wooldridge, and this evening we're going to enjoy a really outstanding hour because we're going to have an author with us who has written quite a few books and has an uncommon background. Before we get to the guest this evening, though, for Connecting the Dots, I'd like to make sure you've got your pencils and papers out. And as we go through, I'd like to have you write down questions, but make sure that you do a few things just before we get into the interview and just before the commercial break, and that is, please make sure you join and tell all of your friends to join numbersusa.com. That's numbersusa.com. Also, write me at frostyw@juno.com and make sure that I send you the Roy Beck video, Immigration by the Numbers. And if you have not had or seen this video, it's only 14 minutes. But in 14 minutes, it will show you the impact of adding 100 million people to the United States of America by 2040, which is 33 years from now. And it's very important that you, of course, take action. And if you go to my website, frostywooldridge.com, you will be able to take action because there's this 26-point action letter there that you can send to all your friends. And the key is to create counter-critical mass of American citizens taking action. And as I've said before, conviction or complaint, or all the other things that most people do, means nothing if there's no action. And so the key here is that you take action, and you're allowed to take action, and even given some really good protocol for taking action. When you get to numbersusa.com, alipac.us, of course, alipac.us with William Gein out there in North Carolina, the Dustin Inman Society.org in Georgia with D.A. King is outstanding. TheSocialContract.com, another outstanding place to go so that you can make impact, so that you can be educated, so that you can make a difference and, again, not have to be just part of the complaint process that's going on across the country. And as I've said many times in the past, you may pick up my book at Amazon.com or Borders or Barnes & Noble, Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, Deadly Consequences. And, of course, that will be also a part of, and hopefully you'll understand and appreciate, the series that I'm doing on News with Views, Rents, American Daily, and a few other websites, even Op-Ed News, which is a highly liberal website, and this is an all-American issue, is the next added 100 million Americans. I'm now on part 23 in the 23rd week, and it will give you an appreciation for what we face as a nation if we allow this next added 100 million Americans. I mean, truly, the series reports on the lack of water, loss of farmland, crowding in America, poverty, energy consumption, destroying our fisheries and oceans, chemicalization of our world, air pollution, acid rain, and more as we add this next 100 million Americans. I think you'll find part 23 to be really powerful, compelling, and really something that's really worthwhile. Also, as you're going along out there and tapping through the keyboard on your computer, drop by the 21st Century Paul Revere Ride.us and see our exploits last summer through 48 states, 20,000 miles, 95 television interviews, 90 newsprint, 60 radio shows, and the 20 million people we reached. And if you want to, go on to youtube.com, that's youtube.com, and you'll see the speeches we made in the Boston Common, San Diego, Los Angeles, Madison, Wisconsin, Chicago. It's quite a rendition as the documentary crews followed the riders. And so that is some of the information you need right now. And if you'll notice, News with Views next Monday, I'm writing a column on the fact that Mexican truck drivers are now moving into the United States, taking jobs from American truckers. Hey, we got the good, bad, and the ugly back, and when we come back after this commercial break, we're going to be talking to an outstanding author, Dr. Brian Check.
hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to Connecting the Dots with your host, Frosty Wooldridge. This is Thursday evening, and I'm glad to have you on board this evening. And again, bring out your pencil and paper. And for the first half hour, we're going to be speaking with our guests. But after that, you can give a call into the show, and I'll give you that 800 number at the bottom of the hour. I'm really pleased to have Dr. Brian Check. He is a conservation biologist with the federal government and an adjunct professor at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University. He's also the co-author of Endangered Species Act, The History, Conservation of Biology, and, of course, Public Policy. He's also the president of the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy, a nonprofit organization dedicated to education and research on the conflicts between economic growth and, number one, environmental protection, number two, national security, and three, international stability. He's also a man who is a little bit appreciated from me because my brother Howard, of course, as you all know out there, has ridden his horse across America not once but twice, coast to coast. And this Dr. Brian Check has also ridden his horse long distance, and we might be able to pry a few stories out of him here in the hour. But when you've got two horsemen like this, you've got true grit, as far as I'm concerned, because I know very much what it takes to ride a horse long distance. You not only have to take care of yourself, you've got to take care of your horse first and foremost, and what it takes as far as watering, what it takes as far as speed, what it takes as far as being safe on the highways across America and the back roads and so forth is quite the monumental task. And so I'm really quite pleased this evening to introduce the the author of Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train. And this book has been noted by Publishers Weekly as Czech is as good at popularizing economics as Carl Sagan was science. And a lady I know in Washington, D.C., Ann Menetez with Numbers USA and the Social Contract, said Czech's thesis may prove to be one of the pillars upon which a sustainable future rests. Czech's blueprint for a change based on his definition of steady-state consumer levels makes it clear he is not just tilting at windmills, unquote. And, as of course, if you all know, many times I tilt against windmills as a bicycling Don Quixote. So it's exciting this evening to introduce Dr. Brian Czech, and welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Frosty. Good to be here.
Well, really is a pleasure, and I'm really curious just to get the audience to appreciate what you've done. Give me a little bit on the horseback riding and why you got into it and some of the things you learned on your horseback ride into different parts of America.
Well, it's been a while since I even thought about that, but at the time I was a firefighter for the Forest Service, but it was a seasonal job, so I typically had most of the winter to find odd jobs and stuff. And I decided I wanted to spend a few months riding horseback. I started out in Benson, Arizona, southeast Arizona, and it took me 3 months, and I made it up to just south of Boise, Idaho. And I don't know. I would say I'm not sure about lessons, but I will say that, you know, how time really flies. Well, that was the one portion in my life where time just dragged on and on. And it wasn't because I wasn't enjoying it. I really was enjoying it. So it was a unique experience.
But what was the most... I mean, I know you, why it drags on, because I've ridden with my brother Howard on Misty, and it's 25 miles a day. You're walking probably a third of the time just to save the horse from breaking down. You're carrying the minimalist of camping gear, and you're at the whim of nature and the animals and so forth. What was your most exciting part of the ride, or one, the most memorable?
Well, first of all, I cheated a little bit in that I had two horses, so I switched off. I'd pack one and ride the other, so I had a few more luxuries than the single horse rider. But I one thing that comes to mind right away is when I was in Butte Valley in Nevada, and a big old snowstorm came up. I could see it brewing over, I think it was the mountain was called Ruby Dome. And it had been, there had been a lot of wet weather, and it was very hard to find a dry place to camp. And I could see that snowstorm coming in. And it turned into like a blizzard, shortly after it started. And just in the nick of time, I found there was an old windmill out there. And, you know, this is sagebrush country. It's a great basin. There's hardly any trees, really no trees to speak of. But around this windmill was a fence. So here I had, you know, I had, it was a little bit higher up. I had a little patch of dry ground. I had something to build a lean-to from with the tarp that I had. And plus, they had a water tank there for the horses. And so, but I had to spend about 3 days holed up in the tent.
That's outstanding. I mean, I love that rough and tumble John Wayne, Shackleton kind of adventure story. And I just applaud you, because I know what it takes to ride a horse long distance across the country. Of course, I've read my Brother Howard's book about 10 times, because I edited the darn thing, and I just know that what you did and what you rode was a life experience that few get to enjoy, and I applaud you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Czech has played a leading role in getting the natural resources professions engaged in ecological economics and macroeconomic policy issues, and you can go to his website. It's www.steadystate.org. That's STADYSTATE.org for more details. And if you have questions, again, at the bottom of the hour, we'll start taking those phone calls. But, Brian, you and I both know that the United States, of course, is a consumer, a capitalistic and massive and unending production, consumption, and waste kind of society, the greatest on the planet at this point. We consume more of everything. We produce more of everything, and we waste more of everything than any other country on the planet at this point. And, of course, we're continuing to grow approximately 3 million plus per year. We're going to add 100 million to the country by 2040, and there are all sorts of ramifications. And your book really starts hammering in on these as an economist, and you talk about the spending, but could you give us some feeling about the limits to economic growth?
Yeah, well, no one knows for sure precisely what how those limits will manifest, but right now one of the impending supply shocks, I think we could classify it as, is peak oil. You know, there's some controversy now when precisely we will be beyond the peak in global per capita oil production, and some folks believe that that has already happened. I mean, some leading petroleum geologists believe that has already happened, and
correct.
Virtually everyone at this point agrees that it's going to happen sometime in the next. Well, the furthest out estimates, as you might guess, are those that tend to be produced by oil companies and plus the government. And even those estimates indicate that peak oil will be here by probably in the 2020s some point. But that certainly is a major supply shock to contend with, because globally we're an 85% fossil fueled economy. And of those fossil fuels, especially in the transportation sectors, petroleum is the bulk of that.
Right. Well, there's nothing quite like oil. I mean, it's the thing we put down for all of our roadways other than concrete. It runs just about everything we do. It makes all of our tires, our plastic bags, our plastics. I mean, it's become such an integral part of our entire civilization that at some point, when it's gone, what do you do? And, of course, right now, what are we? We're burning about 82, 84 million barrels of oil per day worldwide?
Yeah, that's, I'm not sure what the figure is, but that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it's about, well, I did some research on this. If anybody wants to know, a barrel is actually a drum of 42 gallons, and it's 20 inches wide in diameter. And if you take 80 million barrels of oil and put them side by side, they actually will reach around the planet at the equator, and that's 25,000 miles plus, and that's how many barrels of oil we burn every day. And you have to wonder, how much longer can the planet keep pumping out that much oil? It is astounding to me when you start looking at the kind of volume that's being burned and the kinds of consequences that we face once that oil is gone. Do you see, as an economist or even as a biologist, any kind of replacement in the near future, the far future?
No, certainly not in the near future. And I think that the suggestions that there may be something out there far down the road are probably overrated as well. I mean, the fossil fuels are stem from many millions of years of photosynthetic harvest that's then been fossilized. And it's not like solar power, for example, has the potential to take the place of those fossil fuels.
You know, and when I give my program, the next added 100 million Americans, it's called the Coming Population Crisis in America, I invite the students of colleges, and I say, I invite you to become the next new person. Oh, looks like we've got a little bit of a break here. We'll be back with Brian Check and this outstanding information from this book, Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train. We'll be right back this side of the commercial. Thanks for joining us.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
The social atmosphere is that of a besieged city.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Connecting the Dots with your host, Frosty Wooldridge, right out of Denver, Colorado. And I'm speaking to Dr. Brian Check, the author of Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train. And this book has caught my interest because it really lays down what's happening and how we're going to deal with what's happening, and it also gives creative ideas. And just today, in the Colorado Daily newspaper, Brian, I read a piece by the Monitor Review, and the writer said, and I quote, "The challenge lies in the figuring out a balance between the demands of unlimited population growth and limited natural resources," unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shaking my head because I've written for this newspaper before. It's right here in Colorado. And that statement to me stands as the quintessential oxymoron of the 21st century.
Yeah.
You cannot continue unlimited population growth while expecting to tap limited resources such as water. And you're hitting it in this book. Could you give us some of the fundamental conflict between economic growth and the environmental protection and what's going to result if one or the other wins?
Sure. Well, I think we could start with wildlife or biodiversity, because these other species are like the canaries in the coal mine of the environment, and there happens to be a fundamental conflict between the growth of between the prominence of any particular species and other species that it competes with. So, in the case of the human economy, the breadth of the human niche is so broad that it impacts a tremendous number of other species, and the breadth of the human niche expands as a matter of technological progress. And, of course, technological progress is linked at the hip with economic growth. And you could, I mean, if you want to put it in academic terms, you would say something like, due to the tremendous breadth of the human niche, the size of the human economy or the human economy grows at the competitive exclusion of non-human species in the aggregate. And so when you look at the causes of species endangerment, for example, it's like a who's who of the American economy. It's the agricultural and extractive sectors. It's the manufacturing sectors from heavy to light. It's the service sectors that concentrate in urban areas and that serve these other sectors. It's the infrastructure, the roads, the reservoirs, the power lines and facilities. And then, of course, there's also all of the byproduct of this economic production. We call it pollution. And then we have incidental effects of economic growth as well. The classic example that's happening right now is global warming. As we talked about before the break, 85% fossil fuel economy, it's growing, and therefore these greenhouse gas emissions are growing in lockstep with that.
Well, there's no question they're growing in lockstep, and I'm still amazed that you have all these naysayers out there, and I've had many people write me concerning my column on the global warming that was part of the Next Added 100 Million Americans series, and unfortunately, people don't understand, or they just want to negate or stand in denial, but I'm one of those people that stood on the South Pole. I worked in Antarctica for 6 months. I saw it in action. I spoke with and wrote for the National Science Foundation and investigated right along with the scientists. And there's no longer any way to deny it. We are simply cooking up the planet. And when you're burning up not only 80 million barrels of oil every day worldwide, we're also burning, well, just here in the United States last year, 1.17 billion tons. That's B as in boy, billion tons of coal. How many metric tons, millions of metric tons of natural gas, and then, of course, wood was burned. So something has got to give, and in this case, global warming is something that is now on the dark horizon of our future, and to deny it is as foolish as pretending that you can play chicken on a one-lane road with nothing but rock walls on both sides of you and going 60 miles an hour. Something's got to give. Now, one of the things that you've brought out, why is this conflict fundamental, but what's the alternative to economic growth, and how do we implement it in the next very short amount of time, actually, worldwide?
Well, frankly, I don't think that we have much of a chance of implementing it quickly enough to avoid a massive environmental and social political train wreck. But I think that there is a chance of slowing down this runaway train significantly enough in order to basically to save a lot of casualties and save some of the environment for future generations and not mess it up too bad. But there are various things that have to happen, I think. Well, first of all, you asked about what the alternative is. In terms of economic growth, which, of course, population growth is part of. Economic growth is just increasing population and per capita production and consumption. And I mean, the options are basically threefold. You can have recession, or you can have growth, or you can have a stabilized, steady state.
Okay, I guess, Brian, we're going to be coming back here. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Dr. Brian Check, author of Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train. We're going to be right back on the other side of this commercial. This is Frosty Wooldridge with Connecting the Dots. I'm glad you're listening tonight, and we'll be taking your phone calls on the other side. Welcome to Connecting the Dots.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle. And today, you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Hi, this is John Statler, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103, and let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescopic antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. This is your host, Frosty Wooldridge. It's a Thursday evening, and it's nice to have you all out there across America listening to us. I'm talking with Dr. Brian Check, and for those of you who appreciate, he wrote Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train, and he's written several other books also. The Endangered Species Act, History, Conservation Biology, and Public Policy. You can pick up these books, of course, on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. You can get them in Borders.com. And definitely go to www.steadystate.org. One of the things that we attempt to do on this program is educate the American public, not only the American public, but you, the shakers and the movers. You, the opinion leaders, you are the people that get out there, say something, do something, and stand up and certainly speak out. And that's why I'm trying to give you all this information, bringing you these great American citizens, writers, and thinkers, because they're the ones that create the change. They're the change agents. They're the consciousness shifters. And once you shift, and once you read this book, Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train, you really understand where we're what we're facing and what our children face. And as Brian Check just said, we may not be able to stop this thing because it's a runaway train. However, we may be able to do a lot of things to slow it down. And so as you were saying just before the bottom of the hour, and ladies and gentlemen, you can start calling in here in another 5 or so minutes, the 1-800-313-9443. Or you can email me at frostyw@juno.com, and I'll pick up those questions there. And the key is I think Brian Check will be able to answer them for you or certainly give you some direction on where to pick up on them. So So if you can we follow up as far as what's the alternative to economic growth, and what are you saying that we can do to slow that train down, Brian?
Right. Well, nobody wants long-run recession, so the only decent alternative is the steady-state economy, and that's stabilized population and per capita consumption. And ideally, that steady-state economy would be established at the optimal size so that we have a balance of nature with a balance of nature and the human economy. It would maximize the welfare of society at large. And the things that have to be done to get there, well, first of all, in the United States, of course, there is a population problem. It's not of the same nature that it used to be, as you well know. But in the U.S., perhaps an even bigger problem is the consumption problem that you referred to earlier.
Right.
And so in society, on the social front of this movement toward a steady state economy, I advocated something in Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train that was a bit controversial, which is essentially recognizing the conspicuous consumer as a bad citizen. And especially the extremely conspicuous consumer, you know, and to put it into practical terms that we're all familiar with, things like Hummer drivers and McMansion builders and so forth. This type of behavior has a long history in the U.S. It's always getting ahead of the Smiths and Jones and doing that by demonstrating your wealth through consumption, and it's been emulated, and so that it's been sort of a consumer's arms race, if you will.
You know, it really is, and of course, anybody who's been out on the highways, and I was all last summer on a motorcycle for 20,000 miles, Prevost after Prevost, and these are $250,000 Winnebagos that get about 5 miles to the gallon past us, Winnebago after Winnebago, up and down the coast of California and across this nation, 5 miles to the gallon, and there's a ma, grandma and grandpa on the front seat, and they're towing a 4x4 all-wheel drive $50,000 SUV. I'd say you have some what Thorstein Veblen said way back in, 1800 or 1700?
About the end of the 19th century, right around 1900.
Yeah, 1899, I think, and he wrote the theory of the leisure class and conspicuous consumption, and that's so. How do you change that, Brian? How do you have a consciousness shift? How do you have a societal shift that we all can't keep doing this kind of a thing? And that is to consume and to spend and to produce and to use and to waste.
Yeah. Well, you know, none of us knows for sure. Nobody's got the master plan all figured out, but certainly part of the one piece of the puzzle is the academic phase. First of all, we've got to get enough students through the universities that get an alternative approach to economics that's provided by ecological economics.
Okay.
And there are an increasing number of schools teaching that. That's part of it. And then also, you mentioned earlier some of our efforts in the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy to get these professional societies, professional natural resource societies, to weigh in on this issue. Because for many decades, we have turned over the whole issue about the relationship of economic growth to the environment or to whatever. We've turned that over to the economists, simply because we felt that, well, this is an economic, quote-unquote, issue. But in fact, when you think about it, when you think about the relationship between, for example, economic growth and wildlife conservation, there are two things involved there. There's economic growth and there's wildlife conservation. And it's been I don't know what it is, a bit of a fatalistic attitude or something. that we've left that forever to the economists, but we're starting to get more and more engaged now. The Wildlife Society, for example, adopted a position on economic growth a couple of years ago, and a number of the other major professional societies are considering similar things, American Fisheries Society, Society for Conservation Biology, and so forth.
Well, you know, I agree with that, and one of the things, I've been a long-time member, 30 years in the Nature Conservancy, and I've tried to tell them, why don't you get involved, but they won't jump outside that box, and they won't try to promote population stabilization. They just want to keep saving wildlife land and natural land out there to help the wildlife maintain itself, but they won't speak up. I'm curious, in one of your chapters here, in part one, you talk about that Julian Simon, and I've read a lot about Julian Simon. Do you think the kind of thinking, and then, ladies and gentlemen, Julian Simon was a professor who thought that the world could just keep growing and growing and growing and growing, and he was very powerful in his argument. Of course, it was spacious at best. How many more Julian Simons are still out there, Brian, and how powerful are they, and how much can they sway the regular general public and even the big the entrepreneurs and the industrialists?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, it doesn't take many, because what a relatively small number of Julian Simons will have is a relatively large amount of financial support by corporately financed think tanks, Cato Institute, American Enterprise Institute, and some of these. They are pro-growth to the max. And when someone like a Julian Simon comes along, that person automatically becomes their poster child. And so they can get away with a lot of very fallacious rhetoric simply by the fact that they have so much support. They get the front pieces in the bookstores. That's prime real estate, as you probably well know.
Oh, yes.
So that's the problem we have working against us. But on the other hand, I think what we have working for us is that we're on the side of common sense. These Julian Simons, if we get the chance to debate them, for example, about limits to growth, all you have to point out is that to think there is no limit to growth on a finite landmass is precisely mathematically equivalent to saying that you can have a steady state economy on a perpetually diminishing landmass, so that at some point we could have the $43 trillion global economy in the waste basket and leave the rest of the world as a designated wilderness area. It's ludicrous, and it's precisely as ludicrous as saying that there is no limit to economic growth.
Boy, and you really hit the nail on the head on that one, proverbially. And one of the things that I'm appreciative of, I get Forbes magazine just to see what they're up to, and every time they come up with all the things that Forbes magazine comes up with, of course, the top 400 millionaires and billionaires and the Forbes richest men's list and so forth, and everything in that magazine does not deal with reality. And when you come up with the integrity and the common sense, Forbes comes up with bigger money and a bigger reason to keep on growing. And so in one of your chapters here, you talk about Copernicus, Are You Out There? Could you give us a little illumination on that particular chapter heading Copernicus, of course, Are You Out There? And we know what Copernicus did.
Yeah, well, right, and the Copernican revolution in how the world works, how the universe works. This is a similar scenario. We've got decades worth of economics to overcome, and economics that has been corrupted by corporate interests and political interests for all of the history of economics. It's a natural thing. I mean, the classical economists of the 19th century referred to their study as political economy. They knew that politics and economics were always and everywhere intermeshed. But we've got to realize that when we listen to what economists have to say today, and we got to know, well, where are they getting their funding? You know, it's, again, it's similar to that climate change science. Yeah, we hear about these naysayers, and then we find out where their funding is coming from. Well, it's very similar in economics, and in particular macroeconomics, economic growth theory.
Copernicus finally, of course, broke through the reality of his integrity and the reality of his scientific knowledge comes to the forefront. It may not be able to do that in this 21st century simply because there are more, how should I say it, the church? The power of the church is greater than the knowledge of Copernicus and his ability to illustrate and to educate and to enlighten. Do you think, as a professional and as a writer and someone out there who has seen this paradigm working, do you see any chance of changing the church, changing the U.S. government, changing the I guess you call them the robber barons, the ones that are making these immense amounts of money and great fortunes? Is there any chance at some point that they're going to understand that they too are going to become part of the victims and survivors as we start to crash the planet's ability to sustain us?
Oh, absolutely, and I believe many of them are already aware of what's coming, and no one knows precisely what's coming. But I think that a lot of people out there are resigned to this happening, and their attitude, which should not be appreciated by many of us, is something like, well, they'll be on the biggest hills with the biggest guns.
who said that? Was it? I think it was Stalin, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe.
God is on the side of the biggest guns. You know, you make a very outstanding point there, Brian, because in my travels throughout the Third World, the one thing that I noticed was that in all Third World countries, the ruling elite always stayed on top of the pile, did not mesh down with the low class, and everyone suffering below, they could care less. The power elite could care less about what's happening with those down below. Do you see that kind of thing as this country starts to continue this slide of the middle class into the low class, and this kind of economics and the balancing? The average wage in China, my agent that told me, 22 cents an hour, $3.85 a day for a Mexican. Do you see the United States slipping into this third or lower class also with a high elite class?
Well, I think there tend to be balancing processes that occur in any economy, local, national, or global. But I think that, you know, you asked about the power elite and the chance of the American government, for example, getting its act together in time, and there is a chance there. I think at least we do have a constitution that establishes not just a capitalist system that does tend to skew the wealth over time, but we have a capitalist democracy. And going back to our horse stories, why what we need is a strong enough, smart enough democratic rider for this capitalist horse.
Exactly.
And that's what ecological economics is all about. It's about educating that rider, that citizen rider, that consumer rider, so that we know how to reframe and reconstruct our macroeconomic policies and our consumer ethics so that we can stabilize this economy and slow this runaway train.
Well, I certainly agree, Brian, because I've already seen the kind of damage that the runaway train does in other countries around the globe, certainly China, Bangladesh, India, and much more. Ladies and gentlemen, give a call into the program, 1-800-313-9443. If you have questions, the last 10 minutes of the program, we're going to be able to ask them of Brian Cech. He has tremendous knowledge here, and as you can see, again, this week, we're connecting the dots. We're understanding the kind of human Katrina, the kind of economic Katrina that we face. And it's not just the higher-ups. It's not just the Rothschilds and the Bilderbergers and the Joe P. Kennedys and the Carnegies and all those at the top, with the Bushes, the Clintons, and everyone that has this high place. It's going to affect them as well as it's going to affect the poor person down there on the street there on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. This human Katrina, this kind of long-term consequence that's been building for the last 100 years since the internal combustion engine is going to affect all of us. And since that's so, since that's a fact, I know it, Dr. Brian Check knows it, and many more Americans know it, it's time that we start asking questions, start speaking up, and change directions. We'll be right back in the next 5 minutes after this commercial break. The good, bad, and the ugly, of course, always on Connecting the Dots, and it's a pleasure. And we'll see you on the flip side and get back with Dr. Brian Check, author of Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train. Welcome to the show.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Connecting the Dots with your host, Frosty Wooldridge, and I'm speaking tonight with Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train, Dr. Brian Check. And for those of you who would like to get that book, go to Amazon.com, and you will be in for quite a treat. This is a great read. He starts it right off with his horseback ride from Arizona up to Idaho. And, of course, I love the adventure part of that. And go to his website, www.steadystate.org. That's S-T-E-A-D-Y-S-T-A-T-E, all one word, .org. Steadystate.org with Dr. Brian Check. Again, the author of Shoveling Fuel for a Runaway Train and also the Endangered Species Act, History, Conservation Biology, and Public Policy. These two books, I think you will find extremely interesting. And one of the reasons I think we haven't had any calls for the last hour is because Brian has been mesmerizing the audience. He's certainly mesmerized me. You can see from the integrity and this book that I have really gone over and picked out some specifics. But we face quite a challenge in this country. And we have a phone call, Brian, from Jim in Texas. Jim, you have a question for Brian?
Yeah, I have a problem with both of you gentlemen because you're both arguing a false premise. You're trying to equate population growth with fossil fuels. In the first place, oil is not a fossil fuel. Oil is created beneath the mantle or at the mantle of Earth. The Russians have deep drilled to 40,000 feet and struck oil, which completely eliminates oil being a fossil fuel. So you're arguing a false premise, and I wish I could have got on earlier so I could elaborate more, but unfortunately I can't. But these are facts, known facts. Oil is not a fossil fuel.
Okay,
it's not, it's not admitted by the media. It's not admitted by any PhD or doctor of philosophy or any other doctor. But oil is not a it's a carbon fuel, but it's not a fossil fuel.
Okay. Well,
okay.
So
and once you realize that, you realize what the whole thing is a big sham.
Okay, and so that just so we can keep growing to another 5 to 10 billion, 20 billion, there's no end to that?
No, I'm telling you, both are false premises. One, you cannot keep growing people by the gazillions, and the whole thing will collapse if you do, and but I know millions and billions of people are going to starve to death. That's not my problem.
Okay.
My problem is that oil is not a fossil fuel. It has nothing to do with the population. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Hey, Jim, yeah, thank you. I'm going to go back to Brian here in the few minutes that we have. Brian, do you have just a few thoughts on that that Jim from Texas is talking about?
Well, I think he's splitting hairs a bit. You know, it's a sort of a terminological issue, but it's not a major issue precisely how you classify oil, whether you want to classify it as a fossil fuel or not. Like you said, you know, most people do lump it into that category.
Sure.
The main point is, I'm not sure what he meant by not being a connection between population and oil. Oil is like this giant set of, it's like a slave to the human race at this point. And when it starts dwindling beyond its per capita peak globally, why, then all of the services that we get from that energy are going to decline. And you could view it as a massive episode of inflation. That would be one way to look at it.
Yeah, it certainly could. Just in the few minutes we have left, you have a conclusion to the book. It's called Laying New Tracks. Could you just give us a quick rendition in 60 seconds on that?
Yeah, well, we do need to replace little by little more of conventional economics in academia with ecological economics, especially in the macroeconomic sphere. We need to get enough people educated about this such that organizations that have a major stake in this, the natural resource, the conservation organizations, begin to weigh in on this issue and get more of the masses familiar with the perils of economic growth. And
Okay, well, thank you very much. We've been with Dr. Brian Check this evening, author of Shoveling Fuel for